Hey, everybody, Nils Lofgren here from the Bruce Springsteen E Street Band and Neil Young Crazy Horse Band. I'm rocking out with the fabulous Robert Miller on the Follow Your Dream podcast. Keep on rocking.
Everyone has a dream. Robert Miller is a musician who had a dream to become a rock star. He followed his dream and he succeeded. If you're ready to pursue and succeed at your dream, then listen up and get inspired and motivated to take action today. Welcome to the Follow Your Dream podcast.
Hi, everybody, and welcome to another episode of the award-winning Follow Your Dream podcast with listeners worldwide in 200 countries. I'm Robert Miller, your host. My guest today is Jim Wilson, who has had a crazy, unique career arc. He started out as a piano tuner for stars like Paul McCartney, Elton John, and Chick Corea. Then he became a tech entrepreneur by inventing something used on the piano. And then he somehow morphed into a top Billboard recording artist with 10 albums and two PBS specials. His music has been praised by people like Burt Bacharach, and now he's an author, too, with a new memoir. How about that? And in the middle, as I do with all my musician guests, Jim and I are going to do what I call a song fest. I've asked him to send me a handful of his best works. We'll play a little bit. We'll talk about them. You'll get the backstories. And nobody else does this in podcasts. And you also know I like to feature a song of mine in every episode underneath the introduction and at the end, and I always try to make it relevant somehow to my guest. And in this instance, my featured song is Riding the Berks from the album Play by my band Project Grand Slam. I chose this song because, like a number of Jim's songs, mine is a chill instrumental that I literally composed in my head as I was riding my bicycle through the Berkshire Mountains of Massachusetts. So I thought it worked. So Jim Wilson, welcome to the Follow Your Dream podcast, baby.
Robert, how are you, man? Thank you so much for having me on.
Hey, it's a pleasure. I mean, anybody that's got a schizophrenic background like you and like me, I like that whole idea, okay?
Well, already we have a nice little thing of interest there. You said riding the Berks or the Berkshires.
Uh-huh.
And we're kind of jumping ahead in the story here. But during the pandemic, I got an email from Arlo Guthrie. And he says, hey, you don't know me, but I sure am a big fan of your music. And I got this crazy idea that your wonderful Appalachian voicings and the nice open voicings could work over my voice on a reinterpretation of Hard Times Come Again No More, a song for the pandemic.
'Tis the song, the sigh of the weary. Hard times come again no more. Many days you have lingered around my cabin door. Oh, hard times come again no more.
So it turned into this big thing, and I did produce this track, and it was a gas to work with him. So he invited me and my girlfriend Virginia back to the Berkshires where he lives. So what was really cool is that his nearest neighbor were the Taylors. James used to come by. And of course, Arlo's background is pretty colorful with his pop being, you know, Woody. And, you know, the Seegers would come by all the time. And so James Taylor was a dear friend of Arlo's. And that line that instantly comes to mind for me whenever I hear Berkshires, the Berkshires seem dreamlike on account of that frosting.
Right.
Well, as it turns out, Arlo had a guest house on his property. And when James was kind of coming up, he was a guest, stayed at Arlo's property there and in that guest house. And in that guest house, he wrote, "The Berkshires seem dreamlike on account of that frosting."
Now the 1st of December was covered with snow. So was the turnpike from Stockbridge to Boston. Though the Berkshires seemed dreamlike on account of that frosting, with 10 miles behind me and 10,000 more to go.
So I got to play that song with Arlo on the same property that the song was written. It was so meta. And, you know, James Taylor was one of my biggest influences.
Yeah. Well, James lives up in the area. He married a lady that was connected to the Boston Symphony at Tanglewood. James plays at Tanglewood every year on July 4th, right around there. And Arlo has still got the church that is mentioned and, you know, talked about in the movie and, you know, Alice's restaurant and the whole thing. And if you go into the town of Stockbridge, there's a little alleyway and there's a sign that says this is where Alice's restaurant was located back in the day.
That's right. We hung out there.
And if you go through the song, you know, every year on Thanksgiving, they play that whole 20-minute song on a lot of radio stations. So you're right. He's a force of nature up in the Berkshires and just a delightful guy. So good for you that he contacted you and you got to record with him. Yeah, that is wild.
Got to hang out with him on his lovely farm for a weekend and had dinner, you know, down there in Stockbridge and at the Red Lion, was it?
The Red Lion Inn, that's it.
Yeah, historical. Yeah.
Yeah, you got it. All right, next time you go there, you'll have to get in touch with me and I'll have you over my place, okay?
I will. Absolutely, man.
All right. So tell me, how'd you meet Paul McCartney and Elton John? Come on, go back to those days. Let me hear the story.
Well, I got to say, of all wonderful things, you know, there's a theme running through my book, Attuned In, Memoirs of a Piano Man. One of the themes that runs through it is called The Power of One. And it's how one moment, one decision, one encounter can change the direction of your whole life. And what happened, Robert, I was tuning the piano on the set of Name That Tune. Remember that yes. TV show? So I'm tuning the piano. And,
wait a minute. This is what you were doing in your career. You were a piano tuner. Am I right?
That's right. Yeah. Back in the 80s, early 80s, you know, doing a lot of studio tunings and tuning for some, you know, Chick Corea for a long time and a number of other, you know, Barbra Streisand way back then, still as a client.
Wait. You got to stop there. You don't just start off tuning pianos for Chick Corea and Barbra Streisand, okay? There's got to be a story there. Come on.
All right, well, let's back up. So I'm in Amarillo, Texas, and I had wanted to move out to L.A., but a couple of the bands that I played in, the guys could tune pianos. And I thought, well, that's a fun way to go off and make $25, which is what they were charging in the Texas Panhandle to go off and tune a little spinet piano. And so I wanted to do it a little bit more methodically than they did. I wrote to all the piano tuning schools in America, and I found the best one in Cleveland, Ohio.
There's actually a piano tuning school.
Oh, yeah. Well, here's how that went, Robert. I thought, well, I'm going to write to every single one of them. So I wrote to 20. I found a list of 20 schools. 17 of the letters came back, moved, no forwarding address, no longer in business. Okay, this is not looking good. So it was down to three, and the one that suited me best was in Cleveland, Ohio. So I went there, 6-month tuning course and a residential thing. And I thought, well, you know, a course that they offered of grand piano restoration. I thought, well, I'm only doing this as a sideline. This will never come in handy, but why not? I'm here. Why not take this? So as it would turn out, you know, that would be a major pathway for me. But it just seemed like a really great pathway, the whole piano tuning thing, because if I'm going to move out to LA, everybody's going to have pianos and I'll get to support myself while doing that. And I could be my own boss. Moved back to Amarillo and tuned for a little bit, and then headed out to L.A. So on the very first night I got to Los Angeles, Robert, a friend of mine says, hey, there's this band who performs at a little nightclub here, the band of studio musicians. Why don't we go check them out? So That was on a Monday night at 6 p.m. after a two-day drive that I arrived in L.A. And 3 hours later at 9 p.m., I would meet one by one all these studio musicians who would ultimately become friends and champions of my work. And that one led to this person, which led to Chick Corea. And this one led to that person, which led to Neil Diamond, et cetera. It was really crazy how within 3 hours of arriving in L.A., I'd already met all these people.
Well, you're right. It's almost like kismet. And what an odd way to do it, but unique, okay? Because you're right. Everybody's got a piano. Everyone that owns a piano has to have it tuned. Although I just always assume that the guys that tune pianos, like my piano, they just kind of picked it up themselves. I had no idea until you just mentioned it that there's actually schools to learn how to tune a piano. But
yeah,
it shouldn't surprise me. I mean, come on.
Well, the idea of, you know, picking it up by, you know, just by osmosis and maybe learning a little bit here and there was okay. But I thought, I want to do this right. So I wrote to all the tuning schools, and it became this wonderful craft that I would take a lot of pride in, you know, become good at it. And like I said, within 6 months of arriving in LA, I was tuning for Chick Corea, and this or that person led to Barbara Streisand. And, you know, it kind of started picking up steam. And again, back to that power of one moment. So I am tuning the piano in 1983-ish on the set of Name That Tune. And I'm a little bit late. I'm kind of behind schedule, but I see across the room, I see this guy setting up a Dino Rhodes. Do you remember those, Robert?
Well, I remember the Rhodes. I don't know about the Dino.
Well, there was a modification that was done to them called the Dino Rhodes. It was this guy named Chuck Monty. He was kind of a local legend. And I thought, I wonder if that's him. And I thought, I don't have time to go introduce myself. I need to get on with this. And he's finished this tuning and you need to get out of here. And I thought, no, I'm going to go I stopped what I was doing. I went over there and I introduced myself. And he said, I'm Chuck Monty. I said, yeah, I kind of had a feeling. And so we had this nice chat. And he said, I got a piano at home. I want you to come tune it. And I tuned it and I regulated it and everything. Well, that introduction led to these two kids that he had met up in the San Jose area who were working on the first MIDI adapter for acoustic piano. So Steve Solani worked at Sequential Circuits at the time that the head of that company was interfacing with the head of Roland. And they came up with this idea of, hey, what if we had a little protocol where our synthesizers could talk to each other? That was the genesis of MIDI. And Steve was around from day one, from the jump, and he developed this idea, and he needed a piano technician, and that's where I came in. So I flew up to San Jose several times, and okay, very cool idea. Here's how it can better adapt to the piano. We need shorter switches, et cetera, et cetera. So I became the guy, the one guy on the planet you could get this thing through. And so you asked about meeting McCartney, and man, did that one little meeting, that one decision of me sitting there at the piano going, yeah, I wonder if that's Chuck Monty, and then deciding to get up, it changed the direction of my whole life.
Isn't that interesting? You know, for anybody that doesn't know, MIDI is kind of a keyboard type of thing, and it creates a different kind of a sound than an acoustic piano. So you had something that was different, something that was new.
Yeah.
And what you're saying, I guess, is that guys like McCartney wanted to find out about it. Is that right?
That's exactly right. It became the thing that you had to have, you know. And for a long time, I was pretty much the only guy on the planet you could get it from. So I got flown to England a dozen times by McCartney and Elton and Phil Collins and Keith Emerson. And of course, all the studios here and studios in London and New York, and it was just this magical carpet ride. But man, you asked about what's it like to meet McCartney. There's meeting celebrities, Robert, and then there's meeting royalty, and there's meeting a Beatle.
Right.
You know what I mean? It's like, it's this weird thing. Any of us who were around for that Ed Sullivan moment that changed all of our lives, that changed the whole direction of our lives, and that music gets buried into your DNA.
Yep.
And just the second that you see that face, you know, wow. So it was a Friday evening when I first met him. I'm at his studio in the south of England. And, you know, I was there on a mission. I had to install this MIDI adapter. So I had to kind of keep it relatively together. And like I said, you shake his hand and you're, I was delighted to hear actual human words coming out of my mouth. And, you know, it's just such a surreal thing. And so I said, you know, besides the MIDI adapter, I'm also a piano technician. We can do some regulation and voicing. Yeah, go for it, you know. So it was Steinway B. That was about a 20-30 minute meeting with him that first day. And I stayed up until the wee hours working on his piano. And then he came back the next morning for me to show him how it worked. That's Saturday morning around 10 a.m. And he was in kind of this nice, playful mood. And by this time, a little bit more at ease with dealing with him. You know, again, I'm there on a mission. I have to say, this is what this does. Here's how you set the transpose. And so he sat down, he played it. Oh, yeah, this is lovely. This is really lovely. And so it evolved into this thing. Once I kind of realized, just chill out, because he's wants to be here. He's enjoying this hang too. So it evolved into this incredible 4-hour hang of us sitting on the same piano bench, singing a Beatles song and him telling me Beatles stories and covering every little topic under the sun. And in the limo ride, well, that session ended with him saying, anytime you're in the UK, just give us a bell. And I would ultimately like a dozen times, you know, I used to call him with a joke and went to his Homer studio a dozen times. And but in the limo ride on the way back to London, I'm thinking, how the hell does an insecure West Texas kid end up sitting here on the same piano bench with Paul McCartney? And, you know, ultimately these road trips, like you said, with Carole King and Fogelberg.
You know, what's so interesting is that as you're telling the story about McCartney, I'm thinking that when he's in concert, he's playing this upright piano that doesn't really, you know, it's not a big deal kind of piano. I don't even know what the make is. It's got kind of like that psychedelic paint and everything.
Yeah.
But, you know, you had the right move with him for sure. That's so cool.
Yeah, that was a Knight, K-N-I-G-H-T, Knight piano. And he had me work on that. Ultimately, I'd work on like 4 different pianos for him, either, you know, some restoration or in that one, I'd MIDI that piano. And the Sgt. Pepper piano, they called it, you know, with the psychedelic thing. It looked like a little spinet, but it was actually an upright piano that was kind of halfway buried into the stage. So it looked like, you know, a shorter piano. But yeah, very fun.
Hi, everybody. This is Robert Miller, your host. You know, one of the many benefits to me of doing this podcast is being able to collaborate musically with some of my guests, who are among the best musicians in the world. My first collaboration was with the great Jim Peterik of the Ides of March and formerly with Survivor. Jim and I collaborated on The Fall of Winter, a song about a blue-collar worker who dreams of a better life. Also contributing was Elliot Randall, the renowned guitarist. John Helliwell was the amazing saxophonist in Supertramp, one of the greatest bands of the rock era. John collaborated with me on my 2023 album, Bobby M. and the Paisley Parade, and he's featured on several tracks. One of them is This Time. Tony Carey is a singer-songwriter and keyboard genius who played with Ritchie Blackmore's Rainbow. Tony has collaborated with me on several recordings, including his exquisite organ playing on All of the Time. I want you all of the time. I need you all of the time. And I've just finished a new collaboration with the brilliant trumpeter Randy Brecker, formerly of Blood, Sweat, and Tears, who plays on my new single, The Rich Ones. Collaborations like these make the podcast very special indeed. As always, thank you for listening and keep on rocking. All right. We got to move on because I want to get to some other stuff. We haven't even gotten to your career yet, okay, as a musician. All right. So give me a fast forward here. And you started to write and record music. How did that evolve?
Well, my running gag, Robert, is that I moved to L.A. to become the next Jackson Browne and instead became the next Jackson Browne piano tuner because I got sidelined by all this great career as a piano tech and all this respect and things were going so well for me. And the MIDI adapter was just incredible.
Hold on. I have to stop you for a second. I had Nils Lofgren on the podcast recently, and Nils was telling me about how every time he played with Neil Young, there's a Neil Young piano that was used on Neil's earlier material. And even when they play in concert, that's the piano that he rolls out for this. Just out of curiosity, did you ever work on that one?
I don't know that I did. I've had the honor of working for just about every childhood hero I've ever had. I've worked for Stills and Crosby. Crosby for 35 years and Stephen Stills for about the same amount of time. But no, I actually have never met, and actually I did meet him briefly at this event, but I've never had the honor of working for him.
All right. I'll see if I can line up that piano for you. You're still doing that work. All right. I interrupted you. I want to hear about Jim Wilson, the rock star. How'd you get there?
Yeah. So, you know, I moved out here to, like I said, to be the next Jackson Browne and got sidelined by this incredible career that just happened by accident, really. And things were going along swimmingly. And then the power of one, that theme again, how one moment, one event can change the direction of your life. My closest friend died of a heart attack at the age of 37. And that was the thing that grabbed me by the shirt collar and said, listen, you idiot, there's not a limitless reservoir of tomorrows. Get the hell on with your dreams.
Makes you stop and smell the roses, for sure.
Well, there is an interesting dichotomy. There's number one, stop and smell the roses. And number two, work your ass off to get your dream, you know, to fulfill that. So those two can kind of be like driving with your parking brake on. But the biggest thing I found takeaway was, man, this thing could be over at any minute. So stop procrastinating, stop saying, oh, I'll get around to that. Because by this time, Robert, I was forced to reevaluate my original dream. You know, the whole singer-songwriter thing was not quite ringing true to me now. And that's why the title of my book, I'm so pleased with it, because there's the piano tuning thing tuned in, but also it's about tuning into what is my real purpose, you know? And so when Claude died, I had to take a look at that again and go, well, is it about the singer-songwriter thing? And what happened was, in between trying to write the next big hit song, Robert, I thought, I enjoy sitting at the piano and kind of composing these things. No one's ever going to hear them, but I sure do love playing them. And they give me such great, you know, satisfaction, these chord changes and these melodies. And then I got the idea to cobble together some of these into an album. And that became my first album, Northern Seascape. And I co-wrote the title track with Dan Fogelberg.
All right, listen, you made a perfect segue here because we're going to go into that Songfest portion. And guess what I got lined up and playing underneath me? It's Northern Seascape with Dan Fogelberg. Okay, so tell the rest of that story quickly so we get to the other ones.
Right. So Northern Seascape, and he said I'd like to do a lyric on it. I was like, you know, this is beyond my wildest hopes of playing this for him, his reaction. He really, really loved it, played it several times. I said, the problem, Dan, is that this little B section here needs a melody to hang a lyric on. because the melody currently is being played in the left hand. I've been experimenting with that whole thing of carrying the melody in the left hand. So I said, I need a kind of a counter melody. So we'll play it again. So boom, right out of the gate, he sings this perfect harmony line to my bass line. And that melody would turn out to be the Illan pipe melody on the B section that Eric Rigler plays.
Interesting. Illan pipes. I learned all about Illan pipes by some of the lovely Irish musicians that I have interviewed here.
Right.
Fantastic. All right, let's go to the next one. This is To Love and Be Loved.
After all has come and gone, the truth you lived keeps shining on. The world could fall around your feet, but faith would see you through. Of everything held close to you, all but one will fade from view. I still can hear you say, to love and be loved is everything.
Tell us about this.
To love and be loved. My dear old pop left this world, and he was a great, great guy. And he had some strong points and some that were not so strong, but he loved talking to people, and, you know, he didn't quite get to actualize all of the dreams that he had and didn't quite have the follow through that he needed to push through. Some of my life is in opposition to that aspect of him. You know, it's like, no, you got to push through. So maybe sometimes I push a little too hard. But my dad, the biggest thing that I took away from him is the importance of love, loving and being loved. And so that's what that title refers to. To love and be loved is everything.
It's a lovely song, I must add. Yeah,
thank you, man.
Okay, Tangerine Moon. Tell us about that one.
That's kind of something that's a little out of my wheelhouse, Robert. You know, I had this idea. I was with my girlfriend up in Michigan, and there's this crappy little spinet piano in this recreation room of this place up there. And I went there and just started playing around with this thing of like a sharp nine and this little theme, and I kept developing it, and that became Tangerine Moon. It's one of my favorite compositions. It's it's such a stretch for me.
I was going to say that it's different from the others that you had sent me and that I've listened to.
Yeah.
But, you know, I can definitely tell it's a Jim Wilson.
Okay? Oh, thank you, man.
So that works.
Yeah, it's like a theme for a spy movie, you know, waiting to happen, right?
Yeah, I like that. I like that.
Yeah.
Okay, Picasso's Midnight Stroll, which also has Dan Fogelberg, right?
That's it, yeah. So I was sitting at the piano one evening. I just watched a documentary on Picasso, and I kind of had Picasso in my brain. And then for whatever reason, I had this image of him strolling the streets of Paris late at night, looking for the next thing to paint. And this kind of thing in E minor, playing this E minor 11 chord, which is my favorite chord, my favorite voicing. And and just kind of came up with this melody and started whistling the melody as if he were walking the streets of Paris and walking down the Champs-Élysées and past La Tour Eiffel and et cetera. And so that's how that melody evolved. And so Dan was now kind of a fan of my artistic aspirations and supporting me. And he became to be one of my biggest champions in my work. You know, I co-wrote that first song with him, and then he sang on this one and played guitar, and then he sang on another, my Christmas record. But I sent him the tracks to this Picasso's Midnight Stroll, and he did the vocal part. And then he said, I don't know if you want to use it, but I threw on some blues guitar stuff on there for you. It's like, oh my God, it was incredible. And then I had the great fortune of having Bob Clearmountain, legendary mixer, mix that for me. And it turned out great. I'm super proud of that track.
Yeah, it's a beautiful track. All right, so you got this memoir coming out. Does it put everything together? I mean, is it all the different aspects of your life that come together in that memoir?
Yeah, around the beginning of the pandemic, I thought, you know, everybody's always been telling me, man, you need to put these stories together in a book. And so I did. I started cobbling together these stories, the Meeting the McCartney story and Limo Rides with Elton John, et cetera, et cetera. Then I realized, you know, it's really about the bigger narrative. And like I said, in the limo ride back to London, I'm thinking, how the hell does an insecure West Texas kid get here? So that's kind of where we pick up the narrative of it traces all the way back to this beautiful gesture that a friend of my mother's did. When I'm 7, I go with my mom to visit one of her friends, and they're having these conversations, these adult conversations, and I see a guitar over in the corner, and I start plunking away at it quietly. And as we're leaving, my mom's friend says, hey, I saw you plunking away on that guitar. Did you like it? And I said, yeah, it's really cool. He goes, take it. It's yours. And with that, he changed the direction of my whole life, you know? And so it's about how, you know, things like that can change the direction of your life, how music is the common thread through so many things in our lives, and certainly changed my life. And so that's the book is these fun stories, but ultimately it's about my, you know, like I said, the narrative of me finding my direction as an artist and the challenges I had to overcome. And I hope it's an inspiration to anybody else who's pursuing a dream against the odds.
I'm sure it is. You have had a charmed life. You've had so many interesting meetings that have just changed your directionality.
Yeah.
And you've made use of them, and you've got a tremendous career out of all of this. So I want to thank you so much for being on the podcast.
I thank you, Robert. It's a pleasure to be here.
All right. We have been speaking here with Jim Wilson. We're going to listen now to that song of mine that started the episode. It's called Riding the Berks. I want to thank you all for listening, and we'll see you in the next episode.
Thanks for listening to the Follow Your Dream podcast. Make sure to subscribe, rate, and review the podcast so you don't miss another inspiring episode. You can connect with Robert at robert@followyourdreampodcast.com. And you can hear more from his band at projectgrandslam.com.